Dr. Cosman, a renowned medical lawyer, was on wildfire patrol and is a volunteer with the San Diego Sheriff's Department.
This is not kinky sex. In the old days in television, when I used to do what was called Sunrise Semester, which some of you people may remember, when we were idealistically thinking that we would bring the best of the best to the wide, intelligent, popular audience, we always had to have something that was flamboyant. And therefore, I thought I would come as San Diego Shackled. So, surrender to wildfire is my topic. And I want to introduce you to the three wildfires which several of us had the opportunity to discuss yesterday when we had that extraordinary opportunity to tour the fire-devastated areas. We know that there were three wildfires called Cedar, Paradise, and Otay, which in the course of a mere 12 hours ignited in October 2003. They incinerated 383,269 acres, destroyed 2,453 homes, 22 commercial buildings, 763 outbuildings, and burned to death 17 people, including a firefighter named Steve Rucker. The heroic firefighters, and I am thrilled that we have Chief Ray Cheney with us, these heroic firefighters worked ingeniously, valiantly, in the absolutely best tradition of rational integrity. And I honor you, Ray. And you gather that praise and honor is shared in this group. However, the firefighters were exposed to extraordinary hazard, in my judgment, caused by a liberal assault against firefighters, which is comparable to the liberal assault against police, who are disarmed and accused of police brutality when in fact they are trying to keep order in our cities. So, such people as Chief Ray Cheney, and we also had an opportunity to meet his colleague, another battalion chief, Kelly Zombro, not only are asked to do impossible heroic things, but they're asked to do it while they're wearing handcuffs, a patent absurdity. I'm suggesting that ideas matter, that ideas have consequences. Philosophy matters. And in fact, I could argue, and I hope I shall, that certain choices were made which can be traced to certain ideas of knowing, which the philosophers call epistemology. And these ways of knowing can be traced to a worldview, which the philosophers call metaphysics. And this way of knowing and this worldview affects politics in San Diego. Now, you may well say, oh my you were expecting a presentation for people who are dealing with disasters, practical, concrete, daily problems. What in hell does this have to do with metaphysics? Everything. Because the worldview and the analysis of reality depends on how you act, and the way you act in a disaster depends on your worldview. For example, who with his Glock dies at dinner? Mr. Immanuel Kant, who's a liberal pragmatist, says nothing is black or white. Good and evil are relative. Better versus worse? That's judgmental, prejudicial. So nothing is differentiated. There are no hierarchies. All things, all people are equal. Reality is whatever he sensitively senses and whatever he deeply feels. Well, Manny, Mrs. Kant, daughter Jenny, and son Sam are having dinner at home here in San Diego when suddenly the front door is knocked open and a huge masked man dashes in with a large knife, screams threats and imprecations, and starts to attack them at the table. Manny has a loaded Glock 40 nearby. And he's only a few seconds to react, and what does he do? Well, liberal Manny has four thoughts. Maybe the attacker is black or Hispanic. I better hide in the kitchen until morning. Well, my pistol is very old. It's very hard to aim at midnight, and I don't want my wife and my kids to panic. Gunshots cause noise pollution. They release dangerous lead fumes that poison the air. And, well, I could call my next door neighbor, but he's that redneck military guy and he has a shotgun, but, well, he may not know how to shoot straight. So the upshot is that Manny and his wife were knifed to death. Sammy escaped while the killer raped Jenny. Around the corner lives John Locke, who's a conservative realist. He believes with Aristotle that whatever is, that there's a logical world order, and that natural law governs that world. He distinguishes good from bad, evil from good, right from wrong. He believes he's responsible for his own acts, his own life, and his own happiness. So, John and Mrs. Locke and their daughter Jenny and son Sam are having dinner at home here in San Diego one night when suddenly they find that the door is pushed open by a huge masked man carrying a gigantic knife, and he shouts imprecations, and he shouts threats, and he's ready to kill them as they sit at the table. And John Locke has a loaded Glock and only a few seconds to act, and what does he do? Bang! Bang! Locke, with his Glock, shot the man dead who was feloniously breaking and entering and threatening deadly force. And he therefore reacted with deadly force in self-defense and in defense of others. Now, I suggest that there are two philosophical chains that have been broken. And by our bursting these chains, one of which is the chain of being, we have made the shackles, we have made the handcuffs that are burdening us and our valiant firefighters. In the oldest definition, the chain of being can be visualized as interlocking links with God at the top, and then the angels and the seraphim and the cherubim, and then man in the middle, then the animals, then the plants, and then the rocks. And the concept was, of course, it's a metaphorical vision of the way the world works. Think of a ladder, think of a stair, whatever pleases you. But the great chain of being literally has been around since the days of Aristotle. And the concept is that each of us has spiritual, intellectual capabilities which make us ascend towards the heavenly realm. And we have bodily appetites and lusts which make us descend to the animal realm. But we are part of the great chain. But the important concept in the Judeo-Christian religion is, or the Judeo-Christian tradition is, that there is hierarchy, and that man is superior to kangaroo rat, long-tailed salamander, Encinitas baccharis, and other types of plants, and that whatever exists in this world, we name and we have superiority to. This is not to say that we are superior to heaven or to God, but that we fit in a hierarchy, in a chain of being. And there's a second chain which is worth looking at, and that is the chain of title. We who have private property and who understand the law of private property recognize that there are rights and there are responsibilities. And in the so-called bundle of rights that we speak of in the law, we have the property, we hold the property, and then we can convey the property, but we must take care of the property. It's our responsibility if we want to retain the value of property to keep it and prevent it from destruction. Each, under capitalism, each who owns his own protects his own, and therefore virtually everything is protected. And Adam Smith in The Wealth of Nations said long ago that we don't depend on people's altruism, we depend on their self-interest to make things wonderful for the whole society. For when everyone owns everything, no one owns anything, and nothing is protected. I suggest that from the bursting of the chain of being and the bursting of the chain of title, there are four liberal tyrannies that have affected life and death in San Diego. The first is subversive environmentalism. Second, toxic regulation. Third, tolerance for arson. And fourth, sabotage of intelligent self-help. Let's look first at subversive environmentalism. Many of you are aware that there is a concept called LIB, Let It Burn, that was very popular as a type of natural fire management during the Clinton administration. And in the federal forests, there was no fire road cutting, no clearing of the diseased and dead trees, no disturbing of habitat. In fact, I was surprised to discover, and you can correct me, Ray, if this is incorrect, that no aerial fire retardant can be dumped on land or buildings within 300 feet of a water source. in a riparian area. Thank you. And as it turns out, the definition of riparian area is remarkably broad. And that includes, therefore, lakes and other such things. And I discovered that my house could not have water dumped on it. What most people do not know is that in October, and remember, the end of October is when we had this huge firestorm, on October 13th, the United States Forest Service had a lawsuit brought in Missoula, Montana, requiring that, and please look at these words carefully, no fire retardant chemicals, no bulldozed fire breaks would be allowed near animals and plants protected by the Endangered Species Act, which meant that what the environmentalists who worked was for the fire chiefs to go with their helmets in hand to ask the Environmental Protection Agency for permission to spray fire retardants and to ask, please, may I, bulldoze from the Army Corps of Engineers. Now, the patent absurdity of that was made all the more ironic when the great firestorm occurred two weeks later. I don't recall whether we have ever discussed through Doctors for Disaster Preparedness Agenda 21. But if you have not yet discovered Agenda 21, I heartily encourage you to go online and learn what the United Nations has as a proposal for essentially controlling private property in the United States. The United States, through the U.S. Forestry Service, has in fact signed the Agenda 21, and America is one of 12 nations joining the so-called Montreal Protocols, which have some astonishing qualities, one of which is all global forests are part of the common estate, the common legacy of mankind. So if you own a forest, or if you own land which has forest trees on it, if that is part of the common legacy of mankind, you cannot do what you want with your property. I was shocked to realize that here in San Diego, there is what is called the Law of the Wildland Urban Interface. And I have had to learn that law because I live under it. What I didn't know is that that is traceable back to the International Fire Code of the so-called Urban Wildland Intermix, which has as its intention a gentle takeover of private property. If you want to go online to learn about something even more appalling, look up ICLEI, I-C-L-E-I, which has the brilliant method of bypassing Congress, bypassing state legislators and legislatures to control local land that might have endangered species. It is astonishing. All the legislation, the international legislation, protects trees, plants, birds, mammals, every other species except man. And during the wildfires, many environmentalists stated, Well, that house should never have been built there. That was valuable ecosystem which those bastards were disturbing. Man is not a blessing. Man is not a benefit. Man is a burden who imposes blemishes upon the land. Second, toxic regulation. You heard a little bit about it, and we'll have the chance to discuss it. There is a CDF firefighting rule that no aircraft can fly half an hour before sunset. And behind it is a whole series of logical reasons, which I would be very happy to argue against. But there is a precautionary principle. If there's a possibility of harm, no go. The Cedar Fire, remarkably, was discovered by a fire chief by the name of Ron Sarabia, who was house hunting with his wife in the area nearby Cedar Creek. And he apparently had noticed a large plume of black smoke and thought maybe it was a small aircraft having gone down, because who would be out there in the midst of nowhere? And I read all of the transcripts of all of the radio transmissions, and what he said, he first tried to get to 911 and was put on hold for 3 minutes. Being a fire chief, he called directly to the command center, with the dispatcher, and he said, there's a fire, it may be about 20 acres, it's in an inaccessible place, I know the area, and if we allow it to burn, it'll go 5,000 to 10,000 acres, easy. Well, he knew, what of course all of us knew, that there were Santa Ana winds predicted. In the actuality, the winds that night were up to 70 miles per hour. And those winds burned 100,000 acres in 10 hours. That's 166 acres per minute and 3 acres per second. Think about those statistics. 166 acres per minute, 3 acres per second. Now, that surrender to time by regulation is dangerous. If an aircraft had been aloft, it could have stayed for a half hour after dusk. If it had been a U.S. Fire Service as opposed to California Department of Forestry and Fire Protection, it could have stayed up 1 hour after dusk. When I spoke with Shari Lee, the administrator of the Ramona air attack, she said, and this was about 10 miles from the actual site of the initial fire, well, if it had been 5 minutes earlier, we would have had two planes and one helicopter in the air. But it was not, and we did not. I have deep respect and admiration for California Department of Forestry, and as with 25 others of you yesterday, we had the most extraordinary helicopter view of the burned area and a deep appreciation for the men and one woman who were on that amazing crew. CDF has 4,000 full-time employees, It has 1,500 seasonal employees, about 1,000 engines, and a budget of $500 million. It has 23 air tankers, 13 helicopters, 15 air attack ships, the OV-10 Broncos, and for command and control, Chief Ray Cheney flies one. The director of CDF, I believe until today, has been Andrea Tuttle, a Davis appointee, who is an environmentalist and a distinguished marine ecologist. She had explained that the no-fly cutoff evolved from various crashes and near misses and various dangers. All of you know, those of you who heard Assemblyman Jay LeSueur, those of you who live in the area, those of you who have kept up, know that there was a considerable amount of opportunity for some form of collaboration between California Department of Forestry firefighters and other groups. What people do not necessarily know is that there is a 71-year-old law which requires CDF to first ask for civilian help before it can take military help. Well, that probably could have been superseded with a telephone call to the right person. Aero Chief of CDF Mike Padilla had refused Navy firefighter air squadron help because, and he said this on KFMB 760 radio, I didn't know they existed. And then went on to say, as you heard from Jay, that they were not CDF tested, they were not CDF certified, and therefore, once again, by the precautionary principle, there was risk. Therefore, they could not be accepted. He did use one word twice that I found, as a leader of large enterprises, astonishing. And he said, we were overwhelmed. We were overwhelmed. Interestingly enough, the U.S. Navy Helicopter Combat Squadron, HC-85, consists of 240 active duty and naval reservists located at North Island, San Diego, and dedicated basically for overcoming fires on San Clemente Island. The commander, and I understand he has now been replaced, had actually sent a helicopter to Ramona. He had attempted, according to his statement, to get to CDF by telephone, by internet, by computer. He couldn't do it. So at a certain point, he sent a helicopter to Ramona and said, here we are with our Bambi buckets. We can work. And he was told to stand down, get out. He was then told that he needed to demonstrate the appropriate credentials of the people he would have flying the aircraft. So according to him, he faxed 26 pages of training and personnel records, but these were totally ignored. So his people spent the first 4 to 6 days of the fire in the ready room, but were not allowed to fly. Jay LeSueur told you already what I will tell you, that the chief of CDF said they can do cosmetic water drops, but they are expensive. There was a huge bureaucratic morass. Congressman Duncan Hunter, in the first day of the fires, And Duncan Hunter, as you know, is chairman of the House Armed Services Committee, had directly asked General Richard Myers for his home telephone number. Richard Myers, head of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, had said, yes, six of the MAF units, the mobile aerial firefighting units, the C-130s, would be available to us. All Department of Defense firefighting assets would be made available to California. Governor Reject Davis did not respond. CDF's Mr. Snodgrass apparently said that he needed many committees' okays before allowing these aircraft into California. So for four critical days, California burned, or San Diego burned, without potentially valuable help from the United States. Now, if the chain of being and if the chain of title were not burst asunder, if this were private property, suppose I owned not the Cleveland National Forest, but the Cleveland Cosman Paper Company Forest. If this were private property and all the rights and responsibilities thereof, and the firefighters came to me to sign a contract for the year's work and said, we do not use our major aircraft after dusk, I would say, ah, good gentlemen, show me the contract with God which says there will never be an after dusk cataclysm. Or better, show me your contract with your night shift. I want to hire the day shift. I want to hire the night shift, which does dusk to dawn aircraft firefighting. By the way, this is not impossible. Why would I, as the owner of the forest, do this? Well, first, every tree in that forest is connected with my profit. Therefore, if anyone said to me, as the man who discovered it's going to go from 5 to 10,000 acres, I'd say, get your plane aloft instantly, because I can't afford, as a forest owner, to lose one tree, let alone 10,000 acres worth, or, as it turns out, 387,000 acres. But furthermore, I, as a responsible owner, would know that I had my neighbors to worry about. And even if I were not benevolent and wonderful, if I were a vicious, nasty creature, I would still worry that they would sue me if the fire went from my forest to their houses. In which case, in my self-interest, I would assure that no fire got out of control, because I would insist upon dawn to dusk, dusk to dawn coverage. And just by the way, I did that on the East Coast in a very small way. Number three, tolerance for arson. Are you all aware that the Cedar, the Paradise, and Otay all are arson? Do you know that? Isn't that just heartrending? Whether it's intentional or whether it's negligent, I don't care. This is not act of God. These fires were act of man. The Cedar Fire, you of course have already heard about, but contemplate that a so-called lost hunter, age 33, overweight and unhealthy, said the officer who found him, ignited a signal fire in 99-degree temperature in the high fire season, in the high fire area, in daylight. Our sheriff's Astria unit picked up this bastard, and he was only cited originally for blameless carelessness. Now, contemplate this. If I were a brilliant terrorist, what would I do? I would know that there is a 30 minutes before dusk cutoff, and I would set my fire at that time in the most inaccessible place where no trucks could get to, where no hand crews could get to, and I would know that I could completely control San Diego. Remember the Paradise Fire? Several suspects, not yet identified for sure, was set where young people hang out. The Otay Mesa Fire was set by illegal aliens. In the media, there was an amazing absence of condemnation for what had happened. In fact, there was an astonishing compassion for the fire setters. Listen, the fire setters. There were people who said, well, Sergio Martinez is so obvious a Hispanic name, we'd better not use that name, because the illegal aliens from Mexico who were going to be given driver's licenses might negatively affect the way we respond to Mr. Martinez. Maybe he should be kept in protective custody. In our politics of deviance, we were in essence venerating as victims the fire setters, the arsonists. And we were not, and we still have not, prosecuted the perpetrators. We're nearly up to the next fire season, my darlings, and we have not yet prosecuted those perpetrators. Last point, sabotage of intelligence self-help. Do you know that there is still not a plan for evacuation for most parts of San Diego? Do you know that citizen fire defense is essentially not taught? It's discouraged. Call 911 and it's punished when caught. I attempted to have a bulldozer take a particular area that I thought dangerous on my own property. Eliminate it. Just bulldoze right through it. Make a fire break. Make a fire road. You've seen fire roads on my property. Well, I was told there may be Encinitas baccharis and there may be some gnatcatchers nesting in your bushes. And goddammit, you do that and you're going to be fined, and it's a criminal offense. It would be a felony if I cut, but it could be death and destruction if I did not. I will tell you that there are some wonderful programs, one of which is through the Red Cross and has done some valiant work. Another is through the Sheriff's Department called Community Emergency Response Teams. And there are yet other programs through several of the local fire districts. But in terms of a unified plan for survival of the city, we don't yet have it. We need it. I am an attorney, and I also work as a volunteer with the Sheriff's Department. So when our San Diego Sheriff had a new website pertaining to terrorism, since I have been involved in several of the courses, I was asked to review the material, which gladly I did. The first thing that I saw, which somewhat startled me, was the definition of terrorism as a difference of opinion among people who are interested in liberty. And after I assimilated that shocking bit, I noticed that the types of terrorism were bomb, chemical, and not nuclear. So it was chemical, biological, and bomb, but no nuclear. And I said, well, you know, San Onofre nuclear facility is in our jurisdiction. And I was told there's nothing we can do about nuclear attack, and therefore we shall do nothing, because if we say anything about it, it will cause panic. So at the Office of Emergency Services, which also, by the way, is run by a former Davis appointee, Deborah Stephens said about the San Diego wildfires, there was nothing that we could have done that would have made a difference. Well, you all are familiar with the emergency alert system, are you not? Remember that? Brrr, brrr, brrr. This is a test of the emergency alert system. If this were a real emergency, and then it goes on. However, during the wildfires, the emergency alert system was not activated. And why? Well, there were four salient reasons that the head of the Office of Emergency Services gave. The system was old, the fire was fast moving, it occurred at night, and we must avoid panic. Well, St. Paul said it's better to marry than to burn. In San Diego, it's better to burn than to panic. I view the surrender to wildfire as an assault on firefighters, as well as upon all of us. As I understand it, fire is to firefighters as the bad guy criminal is to the police. Fire is to firefighters as the foreign enemy is to the military. If we disarm, we hinder, we hobble our protectors, then what are we doing? We are protecting, we're advancing, we're coddling, we're collaborating with the enemy. In fact, I began looking at the various descriptions of fire and of criminals, because after all, I'm a lawyer, and I noticed as an astonishing connection. They're viewed as natural. They're viewed as incapable of controlling what they do. They're viewed as not responsible. And in essence, we are told that we deserve what we got. We provoked them. We caused the fire. We caused the attack. I maintain that if we emasculate our protectors, we are doing horror to ourselves. For if we hinder and hobble the police, thugs will rule a still defiant city. But if we hinder and hobble the firefighters, thugs will rule a compliant city. I volunteered during the firestorm, not only with the Sheriff's Department, but with the Bar Association. And I literally held in my arms lawyer colleagues who had been burned out of their homes, who were completely unmanned, completely unconnected to the very essence of their beings because they were burned out. Why? People of our type, or all types, define themselves on the base of their place in the chain of being, and also on their possessions in the chain of title. Take away the chain of being, take away the chain of title, they're at intense risk. I also believe that the surrender to wildfire is an assault on excellence. That if we break the chain of being, if we break that chain of title, and we express it in the subversive environmentalism, in the toxic regulation, in the tolerance of arson, in the sabotage of intelligent self-help, we are seeing not a love for the environment, but we're seeing a hatred of everything good. A hatred of achievement, success, invention, creation, competence, wealth, possessions, everything you and I represent. In part, it's envy. If I can't have it, no one shall have it. In part, it's that concept that man is not a blessing. Man is not a benefit, but man is a burden, and man is a blemish. Well, the fires were out. We were talking about this at the table. And what did the environmentalists demand? No killing of the rats in the rubble. Seriously. Furthermore, no planting, because there were going to be the big rains and the mudslides, no planting of non-native grasses to protect the hills from further denuding. But what was thoroughly amazing to me was out crawled the people who want voluntary human extinction. I say this truly. If you have spoken recently with people from PETA, People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals, and if you have spoken recently with people from ELF, the Earth Liberation Front, you may or may not have been introduced to what is in short form, VEHEMENT. It is an international organization called, I tell thee true, Voluntary Human Extinction Movement. And their war cry is, live long and die out. For human beings are a blemish and a burden upon Gaia, Mother Earth. So, my friends, I believe, perhaps you differ, that philosophy is destiny. That we really do have a choice only between surrendering and fighting. In my judgment, surrender to wildfire is a surrender to a collectivist America, which makes this a land of moral ambiguity and the home of pacifist appeasement. Fight against wildfire is a fight for individualistic America, a land of moral strength and a home of responsible liberty. Ordered liberty is what America was founded upon and part of its genius. And I remember as a child growing up with Winston Churchill's ringing rhetoric in my ear. And I think about that every time I deal with things pertaining to wildfire. Never give in, never give in, never, 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 never! In nothing great or small, large or petty, never give in except to convictions of honor and good sense. Never yield to force. Never yield to the apparently overwhelming might of the enemy. For as we fight wildfire, this is no longer Churchill, this is Madeline. As we fight wildfire, so we defend our nation. As I would wish, land of moral strength, home of responsible liberty.